Food these days is just not like it used to be. Not only are we not getting the full benefit of nutrients in our food, but our bodies can sometimes struggle to digest the food in general. I want to share a little story with you today, but first I want to talk about digestive enzymes. Have you heard of them? Or maybe taken them? Digestive enzymes support many things like the digestion of proteins, carbohydrates, fats, and sensitive foods like gluten and dairy. I love my enzymes from Needed. They are optimally formulated by experts and effective. Boy, can I tell the difference. Get help breaking down your food so you are getting the full benefit by grabbing a bottle of digestive enzymes today. You can get 20% off your own digestive enzymes with code VBAC20 at checkout. Visit thisisneeded.com and don't forget to type in code VBAC20 for 20% off today. Hello, everybody. Happy VBAC Link Podcast Day. Whatever day it is that you're listening, we are so happy that you're here. We have our friend Melanie from Texas. Texas? Is that where you are? That's where my mind is thinking.
Yeah, just... Wiley, Texas, just outside Dallas.
Perfect. And did you have your VBAC in
Texas? In Dallas.
Okay. In Dallas. Okay. We have her sharing her stories with us today, you guys. And at the end, we're going to be talking about prom. Right before we got recording, I was talking about how important I think talking about prom, which if you haven't heard lately what prom means, there's all of these acronyms all over the place when it comes to VBAC and birth, but it's premature rupture of membranes. So we are both prom moms here, and so we're very passionate about the topic. And so if you have had your water break before labor really started and got going in the past, definitely hang on in the end, because we're going to be talking more about that and maybe some ways that could or maybe not, right? We're hoping that these are the ways that helped us avoid premature rupture of membranes. So we're going to be talking about that. And of course, her beautiful VBAC story. I do have a review of the week, and this is by, it's like Malka, I think. It says VBAC podcast review. It says, "Hi, I love listening to your podcast. I had an unplanned C-section with my first birth, preparing for my birth or my second birth now. I didn't know what to do or make sure that I didn't end up with the same situation. Hearing so many women's stories and experiences validated mine, but most importantly, I learned so many tips and ideas to help my VBAC. I had a successful VBAC and now recommend this podcast to all expecting moms. Just such a great, no pressure and enjoyable way to learn." I love that she talked about no pressure, because that is what this podcast is about. This is a place where people share their stories, where we share information, both on VBAC and CBAC and, you know, all topics when it comes to birth. And we want you to just be here, be in this space, and have it connect with you how it wants, you know, how it connects with you. And take these women's stories and these providers that are coming on and information given and apply it however that looks like for your journey. And Melanie and I are just, we're talking a little bit before the episode how she's like, this just feels so full circle. Like so many of these women of strength who have come on before Melanie here and shared their experiences and people listening, it really is so impactful, right? Melanie, you were saying like, it's just, I was in your ear, we were in your ear, and these people's stories were in your ear doing what? Empowering you.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it's incredible. It feels very full circle to be here.
Yes. Well, we are so excited that you are, and you guys, we're going to jump right in to her story in just a second. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link Podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. Okay. The table is yours.
All right. Oh, thank you. So happy to be here, Megan. You know, like you said, you guys have been in my ear for over a year. So it just feels incredible to be here. And I hope that, you know, as I was listening to all the stories, I was always hoping to find that story, that birth story that was like mine, and just to figure out, like, you know, quote, what went wrong with mine. And then also on the flip side with feedback, like, what did people do? What are the themes that I was seeing of what went right and how they were able to get a successful VBAC? I was very motivated and inspired by the podcast, listened to every episode. So hopefully maybe my two stories out there can hit home with anyone. But yeah, I'll start with, of course, the C-section, just kind of briefly. So I got pregnant in March of 2021. So everybody remembers it was COVID time. Yep. Still.
A wild time.
Yeah, actually, at the beginning of my pregnancy, my husband wasn't able to come to the appointments, which was really unfortunate. But thankfully, it being 2021, you know, by halfway, he was able to come. That pregnancy, I was really healthy pregnancy. I'm a big runner. So I ran like every day. I had no morning sickness. I was very active. I never, even till the very end, like I ran the day my water broke, and I never had that feeling of like I didn't want to be pregnant anymore. Not the case the second time, as we'll hear, but like the first time.
You know, competitively, right? Did you compete during pregnancy at all?
I've run my whole life. So I ran like cross country and track division one in college. And then now I do more marathons. And yeah, so I ran both pregnancies, you know, not anything too crazy. The second pregnancy, I did run a half marathon. I was like 16 weeks. So, but then it went downhill after that. But yeah, I run pretty competitively. Like I take it really seriously, and it's just like a passion yeah. of mine. Yeah. The only thing I got the first time and the second, but I've heard it before on the podcast, SPD, or the symphysis pubic mm-hmm. dysfunction. The first pregnancy, so the one I'm talking about, a prenatal chiropractor literally cured it. And I had to go back a couple times because it would get out of alignment again. But for anyone that is suffering from SPD, like I was both times, it's amazing. I would just call them witches because they would just literally cure it. And it would get me back to running. It was amazing. And then so my birth education the first time around, I thought I was educated like so many women here, but you know, I read the typical what to expect when you're expecting. I did podcasts, but it was more so of what size is your baby? What's going on in your, you know, your, yes. I didn't do too many birth stories. And I became so obsessed with that the second time. Like that was my main, and truly I feel like you get the best birth education through birth stories. Cause you just get the whole shebang.
Yeah.
We did take a hospital birth class, and now I know a hospital birth class is really just the hospital policies. I remember there was a section about, they had mentioned it like very quickly in passing, like, if you're going to have a C-section, you should take this class. Okay. And then the next thing, you know, and I'm thinking like so many women, I'm like, well, that's not going to be me. I'm not going to have a C-section. I'm healthy. I feel great. You know, like that's just not what, you know, and most C-sections are not planned. So I feel like it really did a disservice to not even mention anything about a C-section in that class. But anyway, I just assumed that you have a baby in the hospital, you get an epidural, you take a nap, and then you wake up and you push out a baby. And that's just kind of, I was not against hospitals or anything. Like I was not against epidural, anything like that. So, you know, I mentioned that I ran the day my water broke, but this was past 40 weeks. 40 weeks came and went, and I was like not, the couple of cervical checks I got, just not dilated at all. They had scheduled a 41-week induction date. And, you know, when I was at the checking out, like at the front desk at the time, I just remember it feeling really, really wrong, like scheduling that date. Mm-hmm. It just did not sit right with me.
Intuition was speaking right there.
100%. Yeah. Of course I didn't realize it in the time as like first baby and everything. But when I look back, I'm just like that just felt so wrong. But so 41 weeks came, and I was supposed to go in at 9 PM that night, But the interesting thing is that my water broke actually like 4 hours before I was supposed to go in. So it was like 5 p.m. Yeah, and I was supposed to go in at 9. And like you mentioned, Megan, it was prom. So it was like a trickle. And I, like many women, I'm like, wait, am I peeing? Like, what's going on
Right, you're
here?
like, what is happening?
Yeah, no contractions at all. And like the little birth education I did have, I kind of knew that like you just because your water breaks, like doesn't mean that you have to go in and that you should labor at home for as long as possible. However, I think because I was set to go in anyway, I guess because I was
Right.
41 weeks, I called them and I just remember they were like, no, you're in labor, come in. And I was like, okay, it
You're like,
didn't
that's in
really,
labor?
yeah, I was like, oh, okay. So got to the hospital, not literally not dilated at all, like maybe like half a centimeter. And they inserted the Cervidil at 9 p.m., which hurt really bad because turns out if you are not dilated, it really hurts to get Cervidil
And if
inserted.
your cervix is really posterior, it's hard for them to get it into your cervix. So that
Oh,
also can cause a lot of discomfort.
that's exactly what it was too, because I think they had a hard time. Like, I didn't think about that. It was probably posterior. Yeah, man. Yeah, see, just my body wasn't like ready for that. But contractions did come eventually. I don't know if Cervidil can cause it or if it's just time. Like I was going into labor, but that was around 1 a.m. I started to, like, the contractions started to get uncomfortable. And I had no way, I had not like practiced coping with contractions at all because I was like planning to get an epidural. I never had any like inkling of going on Medicaid or anything. This is where I think everything went south. This is where I just think it was the cascade of intervention. So first I had fentanyl, which I don't know why. I think because I was trying to delay the epidural for whatever reason. I don't know why, but I had fentanyl first. It was awful. I just remember like the room, like it felt like I was so drunk. Like the room spun and it was terrible. Then epidural, which I know there's fentanyl in epidural. And like that was fine. Like after the epidural, of course, you feel amazing, but like you are stuck on your back then, like forever. And I just think like this cascade of interventions, being stuck on my back, not moving. Like I never ever take medicine as it is. I think my body, like, and my baby just hated all this. So then eventually terbutaline was given around 6 a.m. I guess
To
because,
stop the contractions.
yep, I think that's when some decel started happening.
Okay.
And then they did pull the Cervidil, yeah, to stop the contractions, some B cells. And then, yeah, by eventually, and it's all a little bit fuzzy, but like 6:45 a.m., the decision was made for a C-section. And then 8:01, he was born, and they called it an emergency C-section. And now I look back and I'm like, okay, like, yes, I think it was. I do believe that it was needed. However, I'll never really know, but I really think it was caused. And also, if it's an emergency, I understand they usually like you, they don't wait hours like they did for me, and they usually put you under. And like, so I think, I don't know if that was, I think it was more unplanned. And I look back and I really think that it was caused. But it
And
was for,
that is the hard thing to know. Like a lot of these cesareans, I think I would agree with you that are caused by the cascade of interventions and things like that. And then a lot of providers will say emergent, right? So there's emergent cesareans where it's like really we need to get this baby out quick. And then there's crash where they do put people under crash cesareans, but like if they're waiting hours, it's almost like they gave the emergency title to make
yeah.
themselves feel better or to make it look more valid to justify that cesarean.
Yep. Yeah. I agree with that. And so that experience was really awful for me. Like many, I think some women, I think it's awful for a lot of women. And then I think some, it's not that awful. For me, like no skin to skin. I know that's not like very common at all. And it felt like it was forever for them to bring him to me, and like no one's talking to you in this moment, and I just don't think these doctors realize like in the moment that like you're being robbed of something that you envision and like a really important experience. And yeah, it felt like forever for them to give him to me, like I don't know, 30 minutes or so. He was fine, he came out completely fine, great Apgars, I was fine, everything is just it ended up in the way I did not want it to. I did have PTSD from that experience. Because I was having a lot of like flashbacks to it. So I went through some EMDR therapy. I have a great therapist, and of course, I like talked to her about it, and she was so pivotal for my VBAC as well. But yes, that postpartum was just the healing sucked. I just felt really awful, and then I think mentally it just was a really big toll on me. Like breastfeeding was really hard, and a lot of that I attribute like to the C-section. It was not desired. It was just not great. So that was the first birth. I never knew VBAC was a thing or a big deal at all. Like don't even think I knew the term VBAC. I went to the 6 week post doctor visit. And I remember she was like, "Yeah, you'd be a great candidate for a VBAC. However, you have to go into spontaneous labor by 39 weeks." And I'm sitting here like, "Okay, well, he was just a 41 week baby. My mom has a history of going like late. Like, I don't think that's very likely that I'll go into spontaneous labor by 39 weeks." So I had already kind of made up my mind that like I was not going to go with her. But yeah, I learned later that like that's a very common thing that hospitals and OBGYNs will say to you. But yeah, that's the first one. So then cue VBAC Link. I started listening to the VBAC Link podcast before I was pregnant. I maybe my son was like a year old, and I binged every episode, and you and Julie were in my ear a ton. So what the theme that I heard and from the VBAC Link was that the likelihood of a successful VBAC for many of these women did happen out of hospital. And like you yourself, Megan, and that's not to say that like, of course you can be in a hospital, you can have an epidural, you can get induced and all these things and have a successful VBAC. But when I just heard like the theme, like the overwhelming theme of how likely it is, how much of a better chance you have. And I was never, I was, and also I should mention my husband works in medicine too. He's a physician assistant. Yeah, so I will talk about that. He had a little bit of a hard time with that because just like for the safety aspect of it. But like once I let my mind like go towards like the possibility of an out of hospital, because I wanted a VBAC so bad, I was very, very motivated. Well, then I realized that it was something that I actually really desired, like a physiologic birth, like more, unmedicated. And I think when I look back, and I think that's why I had such a hard time mentally with my first birth, because I think I didn't know that I really like cared about how my babies come into the world, and like I wanted to experience that. And I don't know, in like some weird way too, it felt like going like doing an unmedicated birth, out of hospital birth, it like made me almost feel like connected to like my ancestors. It's like seemed really weird, but I'm like, this is what they did. Like it's And I just think it's something really cool that our bodies do. And I wanted to experience that. But I recognize it was a trauma response for me for sure, to like become obsessive with research. Like I binged all the episodes. I would look for anything related to VBAC. I read so many books. And I toured. So I have a neighbor and a friend who was she was pregnant at the time, and she was going with the birth center that I ended up going with. And so we would go on walks, and she would talk about her experience and like how amazing and wonderful it was. And I was just like, man, like I want that, especially knowing that we were planning to have like, most likely just one more child. So I was like, I hated to have that thinking of like, this is my last chance, but like I did,
I
So I went.
understand that so much because my husband told me that too. And I was like, I really want this feedback. I really want this feedback.
Yeah, and that's okay. Like we're okay. Like it's okay if we have these, these desires and these wishes. Like this, we only get one life. It's like it's okay to want what we want. And I'll never forget. I went and toured that birth. Like so, I toured the same birth center that my friend was at, and again, I was not pregnant yet. It was like an educational class. I was like, well, let me just see what these midwives are all about, and like what birth centers are like. And it just immediately, again, with like that intuition, it immediately felt so right. I remember I walked in, and I was just like, before even like finishing the class, before even really hearing them out, I just like knew that this is where I wanted to give birth in my next pregnancy. It felt so right. And also, like, I'll never forget, I had asked the questions about VBAC, because unfortunately, not all hospital or not all birth centers support VBACs, which I don't understand. But I had asked, a lot of my questions were relating to VBACs. And I remember the midwife saying, well, Unfortunately and fortunately, we do a lot of VBACs. And so I'm thinking, like, well, why would I not want to be with a provider who does the most VBACs? Like, hospitals don't do a lot of VBACs, like, compared to, a lot of people are like me, they go to a birth center because they really want a VBAC. So that just was really calming to me. I felt like I'm with experienced hands. Like they, and also, there's really not anything different about a VBAC, but I'm just like, I'm with people that understand and trust birth. But I
Yes.
made, so, I brought this up to my husband and I mentioned he had his reservations because he's a physician assistant. He works in orthopedic trauma, but like when he was in PA school, he had to do OBGYN rotations and he unfortunately saw some bad birth outcomes. So to him, the hospital was like a safety net, but I was so grateful that he was supportive of my desire to go out of hospital, even though it seemed like kind of like crazy to him. And he came to, we had one meeting with the midwife so he could ask questions and everything. And she was so great, answered all his questions. And then I actually was unknowingly pregnant at the time, did not know it. So I
No
know it's really weird because I think that it's like I toured the birth center first, like by myself. And it's almost like, I don't know, it's like my body needed that and just be like, boom, this is, you found the place where you're gonna give birth. And then I got pregnant. It was really weird. I mean, we were trying, but like also it takes my body, after coming off birth control, like some time. So
Yeah.
it was a shock. I was like, oh wow.
Okay, just taking that quick break, I wanted to talk more about digestive enzymes. I mentioned earlier in the show that I wanted to share a quick story. For years, I have had digestive issues. I have been told to take digestive enzymes, and without much research and just some overall quick review readings, I bought a quick bottle off of Amazon. Well, similar to the other supplements like prenatal vitamins, I learned after starting Nita's digestive enzymes, they are not all alike either. My belly has had issues for years, and earlier this year, I went to the doctor to get down to the bottom of things. She had me bring all of my supplements in so she could review everything and told me to throw out some things, but when it came to needed supplements, she said, "Hold on to these and keep up with them." So, I threw out the old digestive enzymes and continued taking Neateds. You guys, I really wish I could explain the difference I have experienced with taking these digestive enzymes. My bloat, digestive noises, and my gas has improved completely. I always felt so awkward when I would eat super fast at a birth and then return back to support the couples, and my belly was rumbling, or even worse, I started getting gassy in their space. Oh, it was embarrassing, and I honestly, it was painful at times. Those sensations and sounds are so much better, and I can't thank Needed enough for creating such a quality digestive enzyme that helps me give radically better digestion. No matter what state of life you are in, you can benefit from digestive enzymes. Grab your bottle today and get 20% off with code VBAC20. Visit thisisneeded.com and get 20% off with code VBAC20, VBAC20. Now let's get back into today's show.
So anyways, second pregnancy, much harder. As I mentioned, I was not able to be nearly as active. I ran that half marathon, like I mentioned, and then it was the Dallas half because I live in Dallas. And then it's like my body just kind of went downhill. It was much, much harder. My sleep was horrible. I have an Oura ring and it tracks your sleep and everything. And then at the end of the year, I remember it'll give you a summary of like every month's sleep. And like I'll never forget, so I got pregnant in like September, and it's like January, February, March, April, everything's fine. And then you look at the bar graph at the time series, and it just plummets in September, and it stayed that way. It was my deep sleep. Like my deep sleep just really, really decreased a ton. And maybe that's normal, and I just didn't know that the first time. But I did not tell many people I was going with a birth center, and I lied about my due date, which I learned from this podcast, which is very smart to do. I highly recommend it just because I didn't want to let in like any of that negative energy or anything.
Yes.
And and the couple people I did tell, like I did get a couple people who would be like, oh, they're gonna let you do that, you know, like the let you language.
We both do the same thing at the same time, the air quotes, the let you.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't like blame them. It's just, you know, like I think as a lot of people, we don't have like the birth education. And but yeah, and in hospitals, it's very normal to want to do a repeat C-section, even though it is, you know, we all know it's not evidence-based. So very briefly, I just want to talk about the prep that I did in this pregnancy that was made such a huge difference for me. So number one, all the podcasts, like I mentioned. So this one, of course, VBAC Link, binged it. I found the Down to Birth podcast like at near the end. That's another really, really good one. And then I know everybody does Birth Hour as well, which is good, but that one kind of has everything. I loved the more like VBAC specific ones. And then also, they haven't produced one or any episodes in a while, but the Home Birth After Cesarean podcast was really good too because they were all unmedicated, which I was hoping to do, and they were all VBACs. And then books, I read a lot, but these are just my favorites. Of course, Ina May's Guide to Childbirth, everybody says. Emily Oster's Expecting Better, really good. The Natural Childbirth, the Bradley Way, is a little outdated, but that one I really loved. It really taught me what productive contractions looked like, because I didn't really experience labor the first time. I never made it past a three the first time, so like I didn't know like what that meant. I didn't have coping mechanisms. You know, they really focused on the breathing. But the best book that I read, and I haven't heard this on, maybe you know of it, but I had never heard of it. It was The Hypnobirthing, but by Siobhan Miller. So there's a lot of hypnobirthing books, but Hypnobirthing by Siobhan Miller. And I wasn't really like plan, you know, I was just thinking, oh, hypnobirthing as like a possible way to cope. That book was the best book because it went, I really like the science of birth, like the physiology, the science, like what is actually happening in your body when you're getting contractions, like, and how do you work with your body? It just had such a great way of explaining all that. That, and I found that was the last book I found. Like, I was like 3 weeks away from my guest date. And yeah, that one was great. She also is the one, she creates the Freya app, if you've heard of that. So the Freya app, it like times the contractions and it just really helps you with like breathing. They give you a lot of mantras. Yeah, that book was amazing. I did get the Freya app too, which I did not know I was going to rely on it so much in labor. And then they're also in that book, it really was big on affirmation cards. So I would make affirmation cards and I would read them in the bath. And then, like, sometimes practice like through the app, like my breathing. I did some pelvic PT, and then, of course, the prenatal chiropractor. Like I mentioned, I continued to do that. And then, yeah, like I mentioned, the care with the midwives was great, very positive language. I noticed for me, what was really important to me was, you know, not the language of like, I hope I can do this, because, of course, like, I hope that. But
Yes.
my midwives were amazing because every time, like, they would just speak it. Like, they would say, you're going to have a beautiful redemptive VBAC. Like, they would just say that. And of course, I know, like, I'm 50% of the birth story, like, the baby's the other 50%. You know, of course, I know that. But it was so important to me to have that positive language. And I really worked on my mindset this time around, only followed accounts that served me. I like unfollowed news accounts. I had to be very careful about what I watched, you know, things like that. I don't think women realize how important our mental state is. Like, and I get
Oh,
very sensitive.
yes. So talking about that, I mean, protecting your space, right? And hypno, like our bubble or whatever it may be, like protecting our space is so important because mentally, like you're saying, like I don't know if people really understand like how precious our mental space is, but mentally, if we are thrown off, it is sometimes really difficult to get back onto that rail. And you know, I had a situation on Facebook in a VBAC supportive group. I've talked about it in the past, where I was so excited to announce that I was going to birth out of hospital. I wasn't also telling people that I was birthing out of hospital. I didn't really tell anybody my plan. And I thought that would be a group, right? And I wasn't supported. And I had to leave that. So sometimes it means leaving groups. Sometimes that means staying off social media. Sometimes that means muting people that may be sharing their opinions or telling people flat out, I appreciate you so much, but unfortunately, I can't have you in my space because mentally, they're not serving you well, right?
100%. Yeah, I
Yeah.
hate that that happened to you.
I
And I
know.
know that happens to so many women. It's just so unfortunate. And I hate that there's such a stigma with VBAC, because if you do the research, which, people who like have really, quote unquote, like easy births, like they don't have a reason to really like do the research. But if you're like us, where we are all like very motivated to have a VBAC because we already have this like stigma going against us, it's unwarranted. Like it's not evidence-based to
Yeah.
not be supportive of a VBAC. And if you really research and do the stats, and you realize like it's not a big deal. Like the craziest thing that I heard on the Down to Birth podcast was, you have a chance of uterine rupture even as a first-time mom. And
Yes, you do.
it's not that much higher as a VBAC. And first-time moms go their entire pregnancy never once hearing about uterine rupture. But yet, if you're a VBAC mom, that's all you hear about, So it's like, that's so crazy to me.
Yeah. So mentally, you were unfollowing, you protected your space there. Is there anything else that you would give tip wise to protect your mental space?
I think just believing in your body and believing that we are made to give birth, I think that's a really big one. Of course, like you said, unfollowing, maybe not talking about it with people, unfollowing accounts that do not serve you. I think the most important thing, I know we've heard it a million times on this podcast, but where you give birth and who you give birth with is the single hand, mo like the most important thing, because you want to be with a provider that believes that you can do it, like whoever that is. And then, yeah, believing in yourself. And just, I think that's going to look different for everybody of what they need. For me, I'm like a data person, so I needed the stats. I needed to read the books and also listen to lots of women that have done it before me.
Love that.
So, okay, here we are to, I was 40 plus 5. So again, not 39 weeks spontaneous labor, but 40 plus 5. I woke up at 5 a.m. to what I thought was contractions. I had some Braxton Hicks at the very end, which I'd never experienced before, but I just kind of felt like, I didn't know if maybe it was prodromal labor, but it didn't feel like Braxton Hicks because it was waking me up. But then I just kind of tried to sleep through them a little bit. And they were coming very, very sporadically. Like I would get a short contraction maybe one time an hour, and this went on for most of the day, and they were not long at all, like 30 seconds. So in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm like a first time vaginal birth, hopeful vaginal birth, the birther. So I'm like, okay, this could be 24 hours, it could be 48 hours, like who knows? But I did not want to waste any energy timing the contraction. So I was just guessing like the whole day. It was a Sunday. I stayed home, of course, with my toddler. Yeah, I should mention he's 2 and a half. So I waited about it was 2 and a half years before or between the two births. So yeah, I just labored at home with my toddler and my husband. I'm a big track fan. So it worked out perfectly. There was a Diamond League track meet on. So I did the mile circuit while I was watching that. And texted my midwives and just like kept everybody updated. But I think again, we all thought like it was gonna, I still had a ton of time. And then I would say around 4 p.m. that day, I started to notice them a little bit more. They were still pretty inconsistent. I would say maybe 8 to 10 minutes apart and still only like 30 to 45 seconds long. And that was something I learned from, like, again, that Bradley Method book I read is like productive contractions for most women. I will say not for me, which we'll get into, but for most women, they're a minute plus. Like that, those are like the productive contractions. So yeah, I texted my midwife then that it would like that I felt like it would likely be that night. I felt pretty confident that like they were coming, but I was like, it could be middle of the night, it could be tomorrow morning, like who knows? And she texted back and she advised that I take some magnesium, take an Epsom salt bath, and then tuck into bed and try to reserve my energy for when they're 411. And then I also texted, we had a birth photographer this time. So I texted the birth photographer, texted our friends who, so grateful. We had a friend in the neighborhood who was going to come to our house. It's like, and be with my toddler. So sweet. So yeah, I took the magnesium and then my husband, Brandon, he like drew me a bath and then disappeared with our toddler. And so I sat in the bath and I was reading my affirmation cards, and this makes me like so emotional, but I discovered that my husband had he had like snuck in like his own affirmation cards into my pile, and like that's when I found
Oh,
them. Oh,
that's
it was so,
adorable.
I know, it like it still makes me cry when I think about it, because it just meant so much, and especially, oh, yeah, it just makes me so emotional. It was just super sweet, like one of the best things he's ever done for me. So I found those and was just like reading through them in the bath and just trying to relax and like really work with the contractions, because I know from my research that, like you need to relax, like to get them to be productive contractions, like you have to relax, you have to get your body out of the way, and it'll go faster that way. So they really started to ramp up when my husband was putting our toddler to bed, like around 7:30. So I got in bed and I put the pregnancy pillow in between my legs, and I just like laid there. I was trying to establish like a pattern. And yeah, I know manifestation sounds pretty woo-woo, but I want to say, and I'll like, this is where I'll start sprinkling these in, because there were like 10 things that I had manifested or really like prayed would happen. And I was like very intentional about like, I really hope that this happens. And so this was the first one, is I don't know why I just had envisioned laboring with my dog. And like, you have a dog, like you understand, like my dog is like, she's my firstborn, like she's my baby, I love her. And like birth is so primal. So I was just like, she's gonna know. Like she's gonna know when I'm in labor, and she's gonna know what to do. So she did. She followed me into, and I didn't even realize it at the time. She followed me into my bed. And I took a picture with her at 8:19. She was just laying right next to me on the bed, like as I'm like going through these contractions. And it was just, it's a very special, like a special memory for me. And so I was already starting to get the labor shakes at this point. So it's like 7:30, and laying down in bed, it did really help to establish more of a pattern, but they still were not a minute long. They were 40 to 50 seconds long. But then I moved to the toilet, as many women do at this point, like backwards on the toilet. I lost more of my mucus plug because I had lost it, like started to sometime earlier in the day. And then at some point, I looked down and realized that I was having my bloody show. And again, like none of this I ever experienced before with my first. And my husband, he was an absolute rock star in this moment. He was like so cute. He was running back and forth between like the toilet and then like packing up the car, because I think he realized it was, yeah, starting to get pretty serious. He brought me water and he put like, on the back of the toilet, like cleaned it, and then he put gummy worms and like figs. Not that I, it was not what I wanted at that moment, but it was super cute. And then I did, oh, and I should mention, I did not have a doula. So he was kind of like my doula, even though like I was trying to prepare him as best I could beforehand, but like he didn't need it. He did really well. I know like the hip squeezes are great, and I learned that from this show, of course. And so I would like as they were coming, I'd like scream at him and be like, hip squeezes, hip squeezes, and he would like come over and like do it. He like did awesome. And then he was saying that like I left my body like in this moment, and I was like possessed. Because when I was having a contraction, again, I was trying to do like the deep moans and really trying to relax. But it's just funny. He was telling me about it after, and he's like, yeah, it's like if you are looking at it from the outside, it's like you were possessed, and then you would scream at me, and then you would like, and then you would just moan. But then by 9:24, they were coming. So, I mentioned they were not a minute long, but they were coming on top of each other. So every like 2.5 to 3.5 minutes apart, but still not quite a minute long. So my husband was calling the midwives, and she was like, well, they're not quite a minute. Like just have her keep laboring at home until they're a minute. And eventually he called her back, and I think he put it on speaker so she could hear me. And then
She's
that did
like,
the trick.
load her
Yes.
up.
Yes, because we live outside of Dallas. We were the birth center was in downtown Dallas, so it's pretty far. It's usually 45-minute drive for us. So I think, my husband was just like, I don't want to have a car baby. Like we just like
Sure.
yeah, and it was ramping up. So yeah, she called back. I mentioned the Freya app. I really relied heavily on the Freya app. Because I was, w when you are timing the contractions, it kind of like it helps you like with the breathing, like in for four, out through eight. And then
Awesome.
one of the mantras I learned from that hypnobirthing book that I did not know I was going to rely on so much. And I think you never really know when you're going into it and when you're in labor, like you never know what's going to stick. So my mantra that I must have repeated to myself 500 times was inhale peace, exhale tension. And every single contraction, I just like repeated that over and over. I was trying to make it until 10:30 p.m. until we left or like called them again. But no, that's when we got in the car and started heading there. So he made it to the birth center in 33 minutes. The car ride was not fun, like many women talk about. I think I hardly opened my eyes, and I was just, timing them, repeating my mantra, inhale peace, exhale tension. So arrived at the birth center at 11 p.m. I had a contraction on the step right there as I was like trying to get out of the car and like trying to make it. And then I eventually made it inside, and I had my first cervical check of the whole pregnancy. And I, again, something I had manifested was that my two favorite midwives would be there, and they were. And one of them, she wasn't even on call, but she came anyway. So many sweet things happened. And so I got on my back. So she asked if she could check me. And I was like, yes, like I really want to know. Because one thing, again, I had like really manifested. I was like, I want to be at least a six when I show up. And the first thing she said was, she said, you are much farther along than you ever were with Rhett. You are a seven and you're very stretchy. And I can feel your bulging bag of waters and the baby's head is right behind it. And that's the other thing. So we mentioned prom. So I
Yes.
like, here I am. And like my water still had not broken. It was amazing. Being on my back felt awful, by the way. That's why I just don't understand. Like being unmedicated in a hospital must be so hard, because I know like a lot of times they do want you to be on your back, and I just cannot even imagine, because that was the worst position ever. So she started filling up the tub right away, and I, like many women, I was like, I have to poop, and like I get on the toilet and I'm just like, I swear I do, but like no, I don't, like nothing's happening, but like it feels like I do. And I got in the tub right away. I did like a couple contract there, they're still coming on top of each other. I was, like sitting down, and eventually I moved to hands and knees. And very shortly after, like that was very fast. Like that was only about 5 minutes after getting checked. And very shortly after, like my body w was starting to push, and I was like, this can't. I mentioned something, I don't really remember this, but I mentioned something to my midwife about how it seemed too soon to push. Like I was like, you just checked me and I was like a 7-8, like why is my body pushing right now? And I was really weary of a cervical lip, or a swollen lip, which I learned from this podcast. And she, I can't remember exactly, but she said something to the nature of like, if your body is ready to push, like let it push, like this is your body, getting ready to birth your baby. Which is again something else I had really envisioned, was I would have loved my body to do the pushing, and it did, which was amazing. So my water had not broken still at this point. And the really cool moment was that, so the baby was in call for a while, and she even, I remember her saying something on the phone about like baby being in call. So I was birthing the sack before I birthed the babies. It felt like a water balloon, and she kept telling me, she was like, feel down, like feel the sack, and it felt like a water balloon coming out of you. It was so weird. And yeah, my midwife, she stayed behind me so quietly the whole time, like I never knew she was there. My husband set up like my birth playlist, the music, and he just was like such a rock star in this moment. He was getting like a cold rag and putting it over my shoulders, which felt amazing, like getting water and electrolytes and like continuing to help me sip that. And then, yeah, my body pushed for about 30 minutes. And, I don't want to like scare anybody, but like truly, that was the worst part. Like, I remember, I guess maybe it's the ring of fire, but I just remember feeling like my body was ripping in half. And but then it goes away, like, and
Yeah,
very
it's
soon after.
intense. It's
It's so intense.
intense.
And I don't think anything can really prepare you for that. I follow that account, pain-free birth. I don't understand how you can. I don't. And I would watch videos of women who were like smiling and they look great, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that part was so painful. Like handling and dealing with the contractions is one thing, and I felt like I was very strong and I did like a really good job with that. But that pushing part is something else. And his head was out, so it was a boy. His head was out for like a little while, but nobody panicked. And My husband was like ready to catch him, like his hand was right there. And I, at some point, I remember my midwife was like, because again, my body was doing all the pushing. Like I couldn't do, like I didn't do any of it. And then she was, I guess after the head was out for a little bit, she was like, you can try to like try to push. And my husband told me, because his hand was right there, he told me after that my pushes were like nothing. They were like baby tiny little pushes, like compared to the ones my body was doing. And then at some point, my midwife asked if she could help or something. And I was like, yes, please. And I don't know what she did. So my baby was kind of big, which I'll say in a second, but I think maybe he had like his shoulder was stuck or something. So she did something that was pretty painful. But then, like within a second, yeah, probably like
A sweep.
like a maneuver. Yeah, because I definitely felt more stretching. And then, like a second later, he shot out. And he did have the cord wrapped around his neck one time, but like nobody freaked out and they just went boop, like literally just kind of, and then he pinked up right away, cried. And yeah, he ended up being 9 pounds, 5 ounces, which my first was 6 pounds and 14 ounces. So I'm like, no wonder running felt awful. He was pretty big. And I look back and I just feel very like proud, and because I was never once scared for myself. I never once thought about uterine rupture, and I never was scared for my baby. I do have some memories of, they do the intermittent like checking, and that's, I have the memory of like, the D cells is like why I ended up having the C-section. So I was very always very like curious to see what like how he was doing like as during the checks. But he was always fine, and I was never scared. Yeah, so then I got out of the tub quickly, and they just waited for me to deliver the placenta on the bed. It was about 30 minutes, and yeah, my baby latched right away, which was such a relief because I mentioned we had some struggles the first time. The crazy thing was, so we sat there, we ate, we like chatted for a little bit, and then once they did all the newborn tests right there. And then we were home by 3:45 a.m. So my toddler went to bed as an only child, and then he woke up to a little brother. And yep, and that's his story. The postpartum has been so different, and it's been so much better. And I can't help but think that a lot of that is because of just such a smoother birth, and the recovery has been so much better than a C-section. Different, but still so much better. And yeah, I just thank this community so much. I also was on the Facebook page, and I just got so much strength from all the women before me.
Yes. Oh my gosh, such an incredible story. I love it's okay, a couple things. One, we talked about on the podcast. I love when people go look for providers before they're pregnant. Okay, like I absolutely love it. I think it's very powerful. But two, you were actually pregnant and you didn't know it, right? And
I know.
like that's so cool that like you were doing that and then like it felt so right. And like not only was your intuition before pregnancy kicking in, but like you were actually pregnant and it felt right. You're like, this is the place. This is the place. And then you showed like you went past that 39-week day. Like you never had gone past 3 centimeters before. Like so much strength and power, happened through all of this. And then you pushed out a 9-pound baby and, all these things that a lot of the world doubts, right? Did you ever look at your op reports?
I did, and I mean everything was normal, and then the main thing was the D cells, and that's why they were
Okay,
saying
so it
that was
was
the
D
reason.
cells. I was just wondering if they said anything like failure to descent or not, sorry, like
Progress.
CPD or failure to progress. Yeah.
Yeah, no, they did it. I was looking for
Okay.
that specifically, but it was, and I just barely made it. I was like 2, 3 centimeters, yeah, before the D cells started happening, so then they called it.
Yeah. So, a lot of the times we're told and the world doubts us in so many ways. And so if you told a lot of people who are uneducated about BVAC, the steps, the things that happened with the first, and then like even this in, and then the stats of your second, I bet people are like, you did that? But like, you guys, this is normal. This is beautiful. Like, this is what you deserve. You deserve these experiences, these joyous moments. And I'm just so proud of you. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of your
Oh.
husband. Oh my gosh, he sounds absolutely adorable. Shout out to him.
They're so sweet.
Seriously, and your midwife, your midwives and everybody, like you did it. I'm
Oh,
so happy for you.
thank you so much. Yeah, I'm glad I didn't know how big he was before, but also being like my midwives, like there was no pressure at all to even see how big he was, you know. And I joke and I say that, like, you know, that he, I was like, the second baby, I'm like, I always say he healed me, be like, because he really did. Like, my first birth was very traumatic for me. But then my friends all laugh because they're like, you're the only person that would say a 9-pound baby healed you.
Seriously, though, but how amazing! It's so amazing. Our bodies are incredible. Okay, we talked about prom, so this time, total opposite, right? Like, and call for a little bit. So I did some things, you did some things. Let's talk about if you've had prom, premature rupture of membranes, there are things that you could do to try to help encourage no prom the next time. And now I am prom, and then with my third, I was contracting. My water did break way earlier than pushing, my body pushing, but it still waited a little longer. And so I still feel like my efforts in a lot of ways helped. And so anyway, so tell us what you did.
Yes. So mainly just two main things. And again, this is like being with providers who are more holistic. They're more likely to mention nutrition. We talked about nutrition a ton, the whole pregnancy. So I think two main things. The first one was collagen. They really got me on collagen like from the get-go. And I know that some research shows that upping your collagen, that really helps a strong sac. And then the second thing is vitamin C. I didn't take any vitamin C supplements or anything, but again, your body is amazing. I was craving oranges in my pregnancy, so I just kind of think that's part of it. My body was craving oranges. I ate a lot of oranges, so I think the combination of collagen, oranges, it really made my sac strong. And it was, I mean, it literally did not break until like he came out, which was it was
That's
so different.
so incredible. So that's I would echo. So vitamin C, right? And you can supplement with vitamin C like 100 milligrams a day, like starting anywhere between like 18, 20 weeks. Some providers even just say from the very beginning as the placenta is forming, things like that. Collagen, absolutely. And protein and collagen, which I know you guys have heard about Needed, but I absolutely love their protein collagen. As pregnant women, we don't get enough collagen and we don't get enough protein in our daily eating habits. And so supplementing with that and getting more collagen, it really, really can create a healthier, thicker sac. And then something that was interesting that I found out after my second, so backstory, I had kidney stones. I don't know if you ever had any infections or anything like that with your first that made you be on antibiotics. But antibiotics is what an OB told me can also weaken membrane sacs. So if you're on antibiotics, so I got UTI and kidney stones anyway, and was put on antibiotics. So the OB kind of described to me that my body was like fighting in other areas. And so, like, the nutrients that my body was getting was going to like fighting and healing versus creating a stronger sac, which is interesting. I've never seen any research about it, but he was pretty adamant, like, avoid antibiotics during pregnancy with your next one. And I did, and didn't have what I'd had before. So,
That's
yeah.
interesting. I never heard that.
I know. This is a doctor who doesn't actually even practice anymore. This is obviously years ago, but I was like, it kind of makes sense. Like, it kind of does.
Yeah.
And again, I
It's
haven't
yeah.
researched it, but like,
I
yeah,
can
I
see
mean,
that.
antibiotics wipe our gut flora and things like that anyway, so I can understand that. But protein, collagen, vitamin C, and possibly avoiding antibiotics. But nutrition, right? Nutrition is so huge with our bag of waters. And then big babies, you guys, big babies come out of vaginas. Just have to say that it happens. And 9 pounds, that's a healthy, beautiful baby.
Yeah, when he came out, everybody was very shocked, like before even weighing him, because he's like thinned out now, but he was like swollen. I swear, he looked so big. Everybody was taking bets on how big he actually was.
I love it. I love it. I've seen so many babies when they come out and their cheeks are just all squishy, and you're like, that's a big baby. You can tell just by their face.
Yes, that's exactly it.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you again so much for completing the circle, for helping other women of strength out there. I too believe that women, they listen to these podcasts and they want to find stories that are like similar, similar with theirs. And in so many ways. So, didn't dilate past three, induction that didn't turn out to be a vaginal birth. So, a unsuccessful, with air quotes, induction that turned me back. A lot of people, I think, do doubt their body in that way too. Or like, well, I was induced, like, not even medicine could get me there. But there's a lot that goes into that. Sometimes our body is just not ready, or our babies aren't ready, or something is going on. That doesn't mean it's your fate for all future births.
100%. Yeah, so well said.
Awesome. Well, thank you again so much, and a huge congrats.
Thank you so much, Megan, and thank you everybody, everyone who sold their story, the community, everything. It was so helpful for me.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to the vbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to the vbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.